Hey everyone, this is Josh from Solopreneur Grind, and I am here with Nella. Nella, really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you, Josh. It's great to be here.
Awesome. So Nella, the way we get started every time is just want to know a little bit more about you. What are you doing right now? And then we'll get into kind of how you got there as well. I mean, you're welcome to jump into that part too, but love to know what you're doing right now and what business you're working on, stuff like that.
Thanks. Well, right now, my main thing is that I'm a brand identity designer. So I design logos and branding guidelines and basically anything and everything a small service-based business might need, whether that's website, documents, presentations, brochures, etc. It's kind of my specialty, but not a specialty in like a very narrow skill set, but it's more of a like a niche that I found myself in and that I enjoy working in. And right. the other part of my business, which is taking more and more time in the last couple of years, is that I also teach graphic design and I teach branding workshops. So these are like one whole day or half day workshops, or in the case of one class that I teach, it's like a 3-month class that adults take if they want to improve their Adobe software skills. And then we do, you know, some exercises and so on. So that's kind of more intense gig that I have regularly every week. And the workshops are like one or maybe two per month. Sometimes I don't have workshops for a couple of months. It depends on how busy I am. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's basically the most of my work. And what's new in the last year, I wrote and self-published a book. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
What's the title?
And the title is The Human-Centered Brand. And it's basically telling my view of branding that is tailored for service-based businesses, which is where I have the most experience and where I believe I have some unique perspective to offer. And I didn't find any books of that kind before, so I thought, well, I think this is a great opportunity to actually create one.
For sure.
That's my business as it stands right now, but it's always evolving.
Yeah, I mean, all the good and growing ones are, right? And that's really great. That's what kind of stuck out to me when I saw your profile and decided to reach out. And I was like, I'd love to have a discussion with Nella. And one of the reasons is because I am a service business operator myself. So I'm going to have a ton of questions about branding, how to do it, tips, tricks, et cetera. What I want to get into first, if you don't mind, is, and this is usually my favorite part of the episodes, how you got to that point. So can you take us through, you know, like after high school or did you go to school for design and stuff like that, and how you got to start your own business and how you kind of found that niche as well?
When I started out, I was actually a kid when I started like dabbling in design and learning design on my own. And that was in early high school. But by the time I had to pick university, there wasn't really any schools that were nearby that I could go to that I was qualified for. There was just, you know, the fancy art school, fine art schools that wouldn't have someone with my lack of drawing skills. So I went to engineering, which people are always surprised to hear. But actually I was pretty good at, you know, tech stuff, math, physics, and sort of. So I thought that was a good idea. I thought that was a safe bet. But it turns out I didn't really enjoy university. I was really having a bad time there, very bored, and the lack of passion and was frustrated with that. That was, it was a very difficult time. I mean, not difficult. I mean, I had fun. I just enjoyed the social part of university, right. But it's not so much the educational part. I was a really bad student, which surprised everyone because I was straight A student in elementary school and high school, and now I became like a flunker. But on the side, I kept doing design. I kept practicing. I kept, you know, learning from books, from tutorials, and so on. And by the time I was in the first year of university, I got my first paid web design gig.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's funny how that happens, how, you know, even if you try something else or you force yourself into a different program, sometimes the passions and the real interest just kind of pull you back in and you just kind of find your way there naturally?
Yeah, definitely. That's exactly what happened with me, because I was kind of forcing myself to go into a different direction. But this calling for a creative career, for a more creative path, just, you know, it just pulled me back in. And I'm really grateful that I was able to listen to that, that I actually responded so quickly, that I didn't let it, you know, go on for too long. Mm-hmm. I mean, I might have gotten a job in the electrical engineering industry, and then it would be even more difficult for me to leave. But now that I was starting to earn money with design while I was still in university, this kind of enabled me to lead this double life for a while, until I was ready to completely transition and just quit university and get up. That was the time when I got my full-time job. That was basically, I had to be sure and secure and really feeling confident about my ability to support myself with design. So when I got that full-time job offer, I said, okay, great. This is now my thing. This is what I'm going to be doing for the foreseeable future.
Right. And yeah. just out of curiosity, how did you get that first client while you were in school?
Actually, my client was in school. He was a senior student. He was like in the last year, and he had a side business. And okay. Yeah, and I was, they immediately kind of decided that I was going to be the webmaster of the student organization that I joined. And since he heard about that, he was like, oh, great. Now you can make a website for my business. And I mean, it wasn't a lot of money. He didn't have a big budget, but still, mm-hmm. It was the first time that someone paid me for something that I was passionate about doing, because previously right. I was only doing service jobs as teens usually do during the summer. And this was the first time that I used my skills that I developed through my, you know, passionate and curious efforts that I was able to earn money. And that was a big breakthrough that changed my life. So thanks. Right. Thanks, Nebojša, who gave me this first opportunity to earn with my creative work.
Right. That's yeah. Awesome. So you get this full-time job, you're working away, and I'm guessing you're kind of honing your skills a little bit. And then what's the next step there?
Yeah, the next step was getting, becoming courageous enough to go on my own, because having a job kind of lulls you in. You get maybe mm-hmm. complacent. Maybe, you know, you stop kind of pushing yourself so hard, because okay, this is what it's going to be for however long it takes. But mm-hmm. I knew I was going to go back to freelancing at some point, because while I was doing it when I was still studying, I enjoyed it. I loved working from home. I loved working online, you know, by not having to go to in-person meetings, by, you know, doing stuff alone, not in an office with a lot of other 15 people or so. So sure. I enjoy that. And of course, working during the hours that I want to work in, and not waking up at 7 a.m. necessarily if I don't feel like it, which most of days I don't, because I'm a night owl. I'm a late riser. So this ability to tailor your own schedule, that was also very important to me. And the problem was that I kind of didn't have a plan. I didn't have an exit strategy at the time. But the unfortunate event, I mean, at the time it was kind of shocking, but it was the best thing that happened. The agency that I worked for, it shut down. So we were all, mm-hmm. a couple of us were laid off, and we had to go out or either find another job or just start our own thing. And most of us started our own thing. So my colleagues are also now, you know, successful freelancers in their own right. But we all started in the same group, the same kind of nest, where we were developing our skills, improving our skills. And then finally, we all went our separate ways. And now we're doing what we enjoy doing in the way that we enjoy doing. And I mean, everything right. turned out for the best for everyone involved.
Right. So that's great. It's funny how those things that might seemingly be bad, you know, yeah. getting laid off, can actually work out the best in the long run. So what happens? You get laid off, and then you decide, hey, I want to give this freelancing a real shot. what do you do? Like, what are your first few steps? Do you build your own website? Do you start knocking on doors? What were those first few steps or first few weeks like?
Yeah. Luckily, I already had a website because just maybe a couple of years earlier, I think maybe it was like a year and a half earlier, I started blogging actively again after a long break. And I thought, okay, I want to kind of put myself out there as a professional, as someone who has something to say. And I was doing that in parallel with my day job. And I also did like a bit of freelancing on the side. So there were some projects that I was able to put in my portfolio that I was really happy with. And that website was there the entire time. And sometimes I would get an inquiry. And if I had a free time that I could do that alongside with my day job, I would do that. And then when I actually found myself, you know, without a job, I kind of reached out to my connections. I told them, hey, I'm going out on my own. If you hear that someone needs something, that someone needs a logo or a website, reach out to me. I can help. I have like a fully available schedule right now.
Right.
I at one point put a Facebook post. It wasn't on my personal page, saying, hey, I'm looking for a design work. If you need anything designed, hit me up. And that actually resulted in inquiries and in some paid projects, which I always say to people, don't be afraid to just say out loud, like, I'm doing this now and I'd appreciate any referrals or inquiries if you need something. So it's reaching out to people that I had a relationship with was most helpful, because these are the people who are most motivated to help you out, to spread the word. And also because they know you, they trust you, and they're more willing to recommend you to other people than someone who doesn't know you. I mean, just sending cold emails or cold calls, I was never doing that because I would say, right, like, why would they even respond to me? I mean, they don't know me. I could be, you know, someone who's just a crook trying to, you know, fool them into giving me money and without having something to back it up. But when I reach out to people who I already know, who I have a relationship with, whether that's, you know, personal relationship or a professional relationship, that always results in some kind of, you know, whether it's a project or a recommendation or a referral, or them telling about my blog to someone else. And then maybe that leads to some kind of a new contact.
Mm-hmm.
So basically that was what got me through those early years. I was just using all the social credit that I had accumulated by that time and trying to kind of break through. And it wasn't easy, you know, that those first gigs maybe weren't the best. They weren't like what I really wanted to be doing, but it was some way of starting. It was some way of, you know, getting clients in the door, getting experience with clients so that I know how to behave myself, how to set clear and healthy boundaries, what to charge, because that's always when you're paid a salary, you know what your net salary is, but how do you know how much you can't charge the same amount that your boss was paying. You have to charge more because you have overhead, you have all these, you know, health insurance and all those other things you have to take care of. And so that was kind of difficult. But that was all in these early, like, first 2 years when I was learning the ropes. And then I was ready to really start in earnest. Like, now I'm going to get serious, and now I'm going to be picky about my clients. Now I'm going to raise my prices. Now I'm going to make sales pages that tell what I really do in a really compelling way. So my first website wasn't that great. I mean, it was okay, but I kept working on it. I kept improving the way I present myself. I kept improving my messaging. And that was a long process. It took a couple of years, but it got me to the point where people started inquiring about my work who have never met me, who never heard about me before landing on my website, which only started happening after a couple of years. So I have to tell people, you know, when they ask me about this stuff, that they shouldn't rely on their website in the beginning, because it takes some time for the website to start working. usually your first gigs are going to come from people who you've already met before, and now they just have to start seeing you as this professional who can help you. So yeah. That was basically my strategy starting out.
Right. That was such a great answer. I want to get into the next step, which is kind of like the niching down, charging more, but I just want to highlight a few things quickly. Number one is I totally agree, especially if we go back to the first part of your answer, which is relying on your network. Your website won't be as important if you're getting contacts or people from your own network who already trust you, right? The website really pays off for cold traffic, people who've never heard of you before. So if you're implementing that kind of network-based strategy, which I think everybody should, don't spend a week or like hours and hours on end on your own website. And going back to the network part, so important when you said that you just post it on Facebook, right? So many people, and I was in your shoes exactly, where you start something new, maybe you're shy, you're nervous about it, you don't want to announce it to the world, but that's the easiest, most tappable potential customer base around for the exact reasons that you said, the no, like, trust factors, stuff like that. And the one thing I'll add, I think you said, like, that was a great answer on kind of how to get started. It really sums up a lot of what I did, is just get on the phone with people who are even related to your industry. Because what I found was, A, you can learn from them a lot, even if they don't have business or they don't know someone who needs business. You can learn a little bit more about the industry, how things work. And B, I would usually finish up a call with, obviously, you know, thank you for your time, but do you have anyone else you think I should talk to, right? Because maybe they're not the perfect fit, but they have someone who might be a better fit, or they have someone who knows someone who might be a contact. So the wider you kind of cast your net, the greater you can grow your network, the better it'll be in the long run, from my experience. So really good answer, Nella. And I'm wondering if we can now go to the next step. You've got your website, you've been working at it for a year or two, you've learned the ropes of the business side, which is also a really good point that I'm glad you touched on, right? It's not as simple as give me your money and I'm going to do this work for X price. Like, there's a lot that goes into invoicing and sales phone calls and tracking everything and accounting software. So what's the next point? Did you kind of hit a point where you were like, I got to change something, or I got to charge more, or I really like this niche, so I'm going to focus on it? Or how did that evolution happen?
I think it was all what you mentioned now at once. So one thing that started happening is that thankfully I started getting more inquiries than I was able to handle. Mm-hmm. And so I had this luxury of just projecting some of the projects that I wasn't so deeply interested in. The other thing that happened is that my process was all over the place. I didn't have there was just too many moving pieces, because I was offering so many different services. I mean, it's all design, but it's logo mm-hmm. design, it's website design, it's print design. Like, I literally had a graphic design services page with like a dozen items, a menu of dozen right. items, like fixed prices for each of those. And I learned that it was complicating my life too much, because it was just too many inquiries that I was receiving that I wasn't really so super interested in working mm-hmm. on. So what I did one year, I think that was around 2016 or maybe 2015, I'm not exactly sure, but I sat down with a pencil and paper, which is what I usually do when I need to sit down and think and consider something and find the best solution. I just mm-hmm. like doodling and writing. So I took stock of all the projects that I worked on in the previous several years, how much money each of these projects have made me, and how the relationship with the client continued or didn't continue. Because some clients I started working on and kept working on after 3 or 4 or 5 and now even 6 years. And with some clients, I just did one project and they went away and I never heard from them again. So I took all these figures and compared them and learned a couple of important things. One of them was that I enjoyed the most is logo design. So that's something that I was super passionate about. I love drawing and sketching most of all. And I love figuring out symbols, like symbolism is something that's an interest of mine, a passion of mine. Also, I loved doing stuff by hand. So I do some things which are kind of more like old school, like hand lettering and things that are, I mean, they're vectors, but they're still kind of influenced by the past trends, not so futuristic maybe. And right. So that's something that I wanted to spend most time doing. That was my goal. So, okay, that's one goal, spend most time actually doing the thing that I love doing and not so much other projects around it that I don't enjoy. The other thing that I've learned from this, examination was that the people who hired me for a logo design and brand design, that they kept coming back for more. They kept coming back for their website, for their brochures, for presentations, for anything that they needed to do. They came back to me because I was the person who created this kind of a big picture of their brand, who was able to create these visuals that communicate, you know, how they want to present themselves to the world. And when they needed something else, of course, they came back to me because they knew I understood them. We already right. worked together. I already had their brand in my mind. I knew it from inside out. And so those were the most profitable clients for me because each subsequent collaboration was easier and faster and had less overhead and more actually more billable hours. You know, it gets so right. much easier with work. And we also, you know, became great friends. We had our little, you know, communication kind of internal jokes and stuff. It's just kind of, I see them as business buddies more than, you know, just clients that I do services for. So what I decided to do is just scrap all the services, you know, from my page. So it's not public that I can't do print. I can do this. I can do that. No, when a client comes to my website, they can hire me for brand design, for like the entire brand identity package. And mm-hmm. they can hire me for brand identity package combined with a website. So you can do it separately. You can do it all at once. We can do it like first one thing and then in 6 months we do the other thing. But you can't just hire me for some random design project because I don't think that's in the best interest of our relationship. And I don't think that's the biggest value that I have to offer to my clients. Right. And this transformed my business in all the best ways. I started, you know, I became a specialist, but not in the way that I had to kind of chop off the things that, like, it's not that I stopped doing print design. I still do print design, but it's not something that I lead with. It's not something that I advertise. It's something that's like a second or third step in the process, not necessarily the first step when I start working with someone.
Right. Have you read the book Built to Sell?
No, I did not.
So I read this book when I was in the process of basically niching down and kind of systemizing my business as well. And the book is essentially a story of how someone who was running a digital marketing agency did exactly what you did and niched down to logo design. So it... Mm-hmm. Like, you're pretty much like the real life example that's in that book, which is so funny. And I highly recommend that book if you're looking to continue to like build out processes and stick to your niche and even potentially hire down the road. It's an amazing book, Built to Sell. I forget the author's name, but I'm sure if you Google it, it'll come up quickly. Highly recommended. But it's like exactly what you did pretty much. So it just popped into my head. But that's all really great stuff. Now, I'd love to go into, so myself and hopefully, you know, a lot of the listeners are working on or going to work on or growing their own businesses. And someone like me who doesn't have an artistic bone in his body, like I went on Fiverr and got my logo. I don't know anything about branding or designing. I'd love to know a little bit more about it. Could you give us almost like just to kind of break into the topic, like a primer on like what exactly is branding and designing and how do you approach it?
Yeah, absolutely. So branding is this big all-encompassing impression that people have about a certain person or a company or an organization or even a city, a country. So it can be applied to many living and non-living things. But the point is that branding, it includes the visual aspects and also the verbal aspects like the tone of voice, and also some other more strategic elements like core values, unique value proposition, ideal audience or ideal clients, maybe some kind of other brand strategy elements. I don't have, I usually have a chart of this, but I don't have it in front of me. So I'm like, just speaking off what it's on off the top of my head. But essentially branding is like this impression that you build through everything you do and through everything you put out there, through your content and even when you talk to people one-on-one, that also impacts your brand because that adds to the impression that the audience has about you. So brand is basically where you and other people meet in the virtual space, and because they form some kind of an impression based on what they see, what they hear, what they experience. And it's very intangible. It's very difficult to kind of pinpoint and describe. But we do our best to use like adjectives and colors and kind of these qualities to describe what someone's brand is. You know, the words we use when we talk about a brand, like what some brand means to us, what we get from it, from their work, from their messaging and so on. In what way their brand resonates with us, because a brand is not, it doesn't exist in isolation. It exists in relationship with other people. That's the most important thing to know about a brand. You don't do it on your own. You try to set up the foundation, but then it evolves organically through interactions with other people.
Right. And so how do, like, let's say I'm just starting out, I want to build, you know, company X that provides service Y. How should I approach that? Like, should I put, similarly to how we talked about, like, don't waste too much time on a website right away. Should I spend any or how much amount of time on a brand? Like, should I get a logo? Should I think about how I want my branding or my imaging to kind of look? Or should I go hit the streets and try and make sales before even thinking about that stuff?
Yeah. And the way I describe this, and when I talk about this to other people, because that's a frequent question that I get, like, when should I do this? When should I focus on that? I say to people, you know, first get some paying clients, validate your service, make sure that what you offer is something that people actually want to buy. And this is where you kind of reach out to your personal network. And in this phase of your business development, you don't actually need to have something fancy, or you don't need to have a logo. You just need to have someone, you know, a piece of paper with your contact information or an email signature with your contact information. So when you reach out to someone, they know how to reach you. Of course, having some kind of a basic offering on your website would help. Mm-hmm. Or at least if you have like a PowerPoint presentation with that describes your services, or just a Word document, something that you have that describes what you actually do, what you sell, some kind of a sales letter, so to speak. Right. So you can even just print it out and hand it to people that you meet in person if there's a good opportunity for that. So that's the first phase when you're just starting to make money. It's not a big deal, and I would not tell people to hold off on, you know, trying to make money, trying to sell their services before they're ready with their brand, because that will just, that will be a stumbling block. It will prevent you from reaching out to people. It's going to be counterproductive. So you don't want to do that. You don't want to wait until everything is perfect, because it's never going to be perfect. And
unless we hire you.
Yeah. Well, you know, some people actually decide to do that kind of thing, but that's a minority. Minority. Right. Yeah. You have the clients who hire me right out the gate, they usually have some sort of a stash that they made in their day job, so they can invest right away because they saved up money for that, or maybe they received a grant or an investment that they can put toward it. But many people who just, you know, who find themselves in a situation that I did, where I was like out of work and had to start fast, That's a situation where you can't spend so much money on hiring a professional help. So you need to make do with what you have. And I never, never want to shame people for where they are. So it's absolutely okay to just have whatever you were able to put together with the resources that you have. And this is why I write all these blog posts. This is why I wrote the book, because I want this to be kind of available to people who don't have the resources to hire someone to do it, quote unquote, right. Because it's just not a reality for most people in the world, for most small business owners. And I don't want this to be the thing that prevents someone from starting a business. That's definitely not the point.
For sure. So if they get past that first stage, they've made some sales, they're like, this is a real thing. I can see it continuing. I'm making money. And they get to a point where they want to build out a website. They need a logo, et cetera, et cetera. Can you give us a few tips? Let's say not enough money to spend on someone like yourself. Maybe they have a little bit of money to spend and they can go like a cheap route, or might have some art skills or a buddy or a family member who could help. What are the first few steps someone should take? How do you approach that?
Yeah. First of all, what I would recommend to people who are in this phase is to clarify for yourself what the basics and the most important elements of your brand are, and I mean the non-visual elements. So figure out what core values you want to represent with your brand. Figure out what's unique about your offer. What is it about your work that makes it different from other people's, other people who are in the same space, in the same marketplace, who are catering to the same kind of audience, and figure out who you most want to work with. Because these are the things that you have to tell to other people who are going to help you kind of make the visuals. Or if you're going to do it by yourself, it's going to be easier to make those decisions, which are essentially design decisions.
Right.
You have to first know who you're communicating with and what you want to communicate, because design is a type of language. It's a type of communication. It's not just aesthetics. It's not just about, pretty colors or pretty fonts. It's about communicating a certain feeling, a certain impression, certain values. And if you know what those are, then it's going to be easier to find the colors that you want to use, to find the kind of stock photos that you want to put on your website, to even design maybe a logo by yourself, or to go to a service where someone is going to be able to do that for you quickly and for like a low price. But also you have to give them some kind of direction. You can't just let people tell them, oh, I need a logo, my company name is so-and-so, and expect wonderful results. You have to give them some kind of direction of what kind of feeling you're going for. And what helps a lot, what I actually help tell people to do, and what I do when I create designs for my clients, is to go on like this inspiration hunt, results in a mood board. And a mood board is like a collage. You go online, you can go on Pinterest or on Google search or any kind of image search platform or website, where you type those words. Like let's say that the quality you want to portray is elegance, and you type elegant and you see what kind of photos come up. Then you want to, I don't know, maybe it's vintage, and then you see what kind of photos come up when you type vintage. And then so you collect this, all these graphics that speak to you, that present what you kind of want to portray with your own brand. So you're turning the intangible into visual with this step, which is fun, actually. People enjoy doing that because it's you feel like you're not doing anything, but you're actually doing a lot. It's it takes a lot of effort and takes a lot of focus on what you actually want to communicate. And when you have this collection of images, cartoons, samples of colors, color palettes, and even fonts sometimes, then you can either take that as a springboard to actually create your own logo from that, or your own website design, or you can show that to someone who is a designer, who will then see, okay, I get what you mean. I see what you like. Now I can do something that I think you might like, you know, for a logo. So that's kind of my tips. Yeah, you can do that on your own, and you can do that with other people's help. And it doesn't require any artistic skills. It's very low tech. If you can use social media, you can create a mood board with no issues. You can just use Pinterest for that. I find that people mostly find Pinterest most intuitive, because it also has all those tags, and it can search for related images and stuff like that. But in the end, it's about focusing on these words and qualities and explaining what is actually special about what you do. If you can articulate that, you are already a long way, you know, towards having a brand that is really clear and substantial, and that other people are going to respond to very well.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Nella, this is great. I have one more question as we're kind of getting to the end of the time here. Do you have two or three either like pieces of information or tips that are often overlooked by entrepreneurs who are not very, you know, design savvy, things we may overlook, we might not even know about, even like two or three from the book maybe that you think someone like, for example, someone like me, I mentioned this before, I don't have a creative bone in my body. I can't draw. I can't do any of this stuff. I just want a logo so that I have something in my, you know, my social profiles and stuff. Are there any tips or tricks or things I should think about or consider coming from your perspective and your specialty?
Well, I have a lot of them, but I'll just keep it to a couple. I mean, I actually teach design, so this is something that I have to also tell to my students to pay attention to. So one thing that I would definitely recommend if you're trying to use a symbol or a graphic as a logo, make sure it's just very simple. Because the most common issue that I see is that people pick a very complicated graphic, and then you scale it down to like a Twitter avatar or an app icon or something like that, or a signature logo. It just loses detail. It's unclear what it is, and it's not helping. So of course, also if you want to print it on a business card, it also gets very small. So logos need to be clear, even when they're very small, which makes it a very challenging effort. You know, it's a challenging assignment to make something that is appealing but also very simple. So when in doubt, simplify. Just simplify and simplify some more, and then you'll make sure that the logo is going to look great on every size of the social media icon or printed element or wherever you use it. The second suggestion that I have is try to stick to one font family. A font family is a style of font, of what the letters look like. So we call something a font because it has several, it has some kind of some stylistic differences between other fonts. So it's either classic, maybe it has those little legs at the bottom, which are called serifs. So it's a serif font, or maybe it's very techy. Maybe it's very angular, or maybe it's very round. And the best way to not make a mistake here is to just use one and stick to that one. And it's going to look nice wherever you use it. Don't combine several unless you are positive that you know how to combine different fonts. Because when you combine two fonts, they have to be harmonious. You can't just use any. You can't just use a script font and then one that looks futuristic and techy. Those two don't go together. It's not going to fit. So my tip would be just use one, and you can use a bold version, italic version, regular version. Like, there are many ways you can combine these little kind of differences that still look coherent. They still look harmonious when you look them, you know, as a whole. And one other tip, and very important tip, ask your friends. When you create something on your own, just send it to a couple of people and ask them, what do you see? What do you get from this? Because they might notice something awkward or off that hasn't even occurred to you. So this is something that I do. You know, when I'm not sure about something, I show it to my partner or show it to my friend, and they they can verify whether this is something that looks good or if it has some kind of a detail that makes it confusing or that it reminds them of something, either if it's some logo that exists already or if it's some unflattering detail, like maybe the shape is kind of unflattering. I'm not going to say what it can look like, but logos can look like a lot of different things. And sometimes the thing that they resemble is it's actually very, you know, it's either funny or gross or something. So try to avoid that by asking other people what they think about it.
Right. Yeah, that's a great step. Awesome, Nala. This has been really, really insightful. I really appreciate you coming on. Do you have any, can you plug your website or the book again, anywhere people can find you or check you out?
Yeah, well, thank you. First of all, this was a very interesting and conversation that I enjoyed very much. And you, I'm glad that we covered so much ground, and I hope listeners will appreciate that. And if they want to check out more of my stuff and maybe read more tips that I have, so first place to go to is NalaDonato.com, where I have a blog with a several hundred articles on topics such as business, design, productivity, creativity, etc. I have lots of interest, so it's a kind of, it's varied. And also, if you're interested in branding, to learn how to do it for yourself, to learn how to be your own brand strategist and to learn some design tips along the way, then my book, The Human Centered Brand, is a great place to check out. So there's a free chapter that you can download and see for yourself if you like it. So that would be my suggestion. Of course, I'm on many social media channels. So if you want to ask a question or chat or, you know, follow my work, I'd be very happy to connect.
Awesome. And we'll have links to all those in the descriptions. And Nala, thanks again for coming on. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Josh. It has been a pleasure.
Hey everyone, Josh checking in just one more time. Wanted to say thanks a lot for listening to the episode. Hope you got a lot of value out of it. And I wanted to see if you're interested in joining my email list. The link will be in the description of whatever podcast platform you're listening to this episode on, whether it be iTunes or Google Play or whatever. And what I do is I send out 3 emails a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, usually in the morning. And they're pretty short, usually around 300-400 words. And what I'm doing is sharing some extra thoughts, insights, ideas, struggles, lessons I've learned, because I am running my own service business too, and I love to share my thoughts, opinions, and just want to add some more value right to your inbox every week. So if you're interested, take a look at the sign up link in the podcast description on whatever you're listening this to on, and I hope to see you there, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Take care.